Thank you.
So I'm pacing myself as well, like Vidyamala, and I've been sitting in the car for several hours today, so I'm going to stand up to give this little talk. So I'll just tell you a little bit about me. I'm quite old, that's one thing, and another thing is that, what was I going to tell you? Oh yeah, you know sometimes you divide people up into people who, oh no, I was going to tell you this. I'll get going in a minute. When I left school, I became an engineer. So I haven't really got any experience in working in the health profession, except I used to design building services for hospitals. So I know a lot about hospitals and building services, but I have an engineering background. I'm also said to be an extroverted thinker. So words just come out of my mouth. They're actually my thoughts. So if sometimes I go off a little bit when I'm talking, it's just because I'm thinking. And you might not know what I'm talking about or where I'm going. And I might not know, so don't worry, I'll get back when I've worked out what I'm thinking. And the other thing is, you know, sometimes people think of you as a person who looks at the world as like a glass of water that's half empty or half full. Well, I'm told that I look at the world as someone who sees a glass half empty. But I always tell people, that's because I'm trying to work out how to fill it up. So I usually have a very positive take on things. So one of the positive things that happened to me in my life recently is that the week before last, my father celebrated his 100th birthday. And so hopefully I might only be just over the middle bit of my lifespan if I follow in his footsteps. But one of the things I've noticed about my father, and generally about older people, elders, senior elders as well, that they love telling stories. I mean, my father loves telling stories. In fact, he becomes most alive when he's telling a story, usually about the war. And usually it's the same story, or one of several stories that I've heard before. And some years ago, I noticed that I was starting to do this. I was telling people, say, oh yeah, I remember then, and then I start telling them about the story. And when it happened a couple of times that once someone said to me, yeah, you told me that once before, I started thinking, I'm going to have to do something. I'm going to have to apply my mindfulness training on catching myself when I'm telling a story. Anyway, that hasn't really worked that well. So I've come up with a new strategy now. I decided a few weeks ago that I'm going to make up stories. Because you don't have to tell the same story then. You can just make up stories and go on. And so this evening, I'm going to do something a bit different. I was thinking I'll make up a story for this evening and then I'll share it with you. So, but how do you make up a story? I haven't really got any experience of making up stories. My daughter started to write novels now, and she's making up stories. I thought she can do it. Maybe I can do it. Anyway, I took Vidyamala's advice, and I just sat in meditation. You know what? A story came to me. So I'm going to share this little story with you. But first of all, before I start, I want to just check if anyone here is Swedish. Well, that's good. Because one of the characters in this story has a Swedish name. So this is a story that takes place sometime in the past. Can't say when, but it's just kind of, don't worry about trying to fit it into a psychological sequence too much. It has a logical sequence because it starts with him being born. Right? So that was the beginning. And his parents decided to call him Sturbjörn, which means something like tamed bear. So it's a big, big animal, but it's in control. Okay, so Sturbjörn. And Sturbjörn was the only child. He had a mother and father. He lived in a small village way up in the north of the world, probably north of Sweden somewhere. And when he was about 8 years old, well, maybe even younger, I think if I remember in this dream story, that he was a bit younger than that, 6 or 7 years old. He woke up one morning and he realised he was awake. He realised he was in bed and he had sheets on him and he was awake. And he'd never realised this before. He started wondering how he got there. How comes he's in this bed with sheets? And so he started asking the question, yeah, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And he starts sort of working out, oh, look, my mum put me to bed last night. But how did I get here in this place with these sheets? And he gradually began to develop a whole inquisitive mind. His mind wanted to know why. As soon as he started to become awake, he wanted to know why he was awake. Why he was here. Why was he in this bed? Why was he in this world? And of course, just reframing that word, why, you sometimes ask the question, how or what for? So he wondered, you know, what was he supposed to be doing? And he had this sense that he was going to do something with his life. So he started growing up, he went to school, and I think he even had an experience that it felt as though his mind wasn't really that developed, that maybe some of the questions he was asking himself, his mind couldn't quite cope with. In fact, he decided to ask his mum and dad a few questions. So he went, first of all, to his father, and he said, Papa, so he'll speak up north, Papa. I was wondering if you could tell me why I'm here. And his father said, well, you're here to be a good son, to be a good man, to be honest, to be upright, to serve the community, look after your mother and father, and I'm very busy. So, you know, he said, okay, Papa, and he goes off. And he thought maybe he should get some more help from Mama. So he went to find Mama, and he said, Mama, can you tell me, Mama, why am I here? She said, Sturbjörn, you're here because of love. Because I love your father, we had a child that we wanted to love, and you're here so we can love you. And he thought, nice. But he wasn't quite satisfied with that answer, because, you know, how do you just walk around as an object of love? It's not easy, really, is it? Just thinking, okay, I'm here to be loved. Come on, love me. And so he felt there must be some other way of looking at the world. So he started asking lots of people kind of a question, kind of a deep existential question, really, of why am I here and how did it all come about that I happen to be here? So, you know, when did I begin and when did others begin? And he went to one person who was called something like a priest, and he asked this priest, why am I here? And he said it was because of God. God created you. So he said, why? And he said, God's a mystery, and we don't know why he created you, but he did. Okay, so Sturbjörn then started thinking, well, God was just an answer for, I don't know. but, you know, it's a good if anyone ever asks you, you know, how did something happen, you say, well, God did it. It's a mystery. And that's, you know, you're happy with that. He wasn't. So he made a thorough nuisance of himself. You can imagine, can't you, how a young boy, really intelligent, going around saying, oh, what are you doing? And people would explain what they're doing. And they said, well, why are you doing it? You know, you might say, I'm a doctor. And they say, well, why are you a doctor? Well, I want to help people. Well, why do you want to help people? Well, to make them, you know, healthy. Well, why do they need to be healthy? So they'd be happy. Well, why do they have to be happy? And, you know, you imagine having someone like that asking you all day long what you, in this question, why, you would kind of avoid them. Uh-oh, here comes why. And actually, he got a nickname, because the Swedish word for why is something like varför. So they kept calling him varför. Uh-oh, here comes varför. So it kind of disappeared. Anyway, he was getting more and more frustrated, and what he couldn't understand is why no one else was asking why. Everyone seemed to be happy, getting on with their lives, just doing what they were doing, whether building boats or houses or being doctors and nurses, and they were just getting on with their lives, and no one was saying, well, why am I doing it? Why? And how did it all start? And who began it all? And what for? What am I supposed to do here? And he found this very confusing, that no one was doing this. So he went back to Papa, and he said, I know you're busy, Papa, but I really need some help here. He was getting older by this time, probably in his teens. And his Papa realised he needed to put a bit aside, time aside to talk to his son. And he's a good father. And he sat down with him, and he said, well, I think the sort of questions you're asking are very, very complex and difficult to answer. And I don't really feel I'd be the right person to do that. But there is I've heard of this very wise person, this wise woman, who lives further up north in the mountains. She's a bit like what some people call a shaman, or a wise woman. And I think it would be helpful, now that you must have been about 16, 17, now that you're old enough to go on a journey, perhaps you should go and find this woman. So he decides, after some time thinking about it and overcoming his fear for travel and so forth, to go on a search to seek out this... I made some notes about my story just to help the narrative here. So he goes off and he finds this shaman woman, and he eventually... It's too long a story to tell that bit, right, because that's another story going there. So I'll cut to the chase and get to the cave, or the little house that she was living in. And she was... when he got there, first of all, he was a bit surprised, because she was quite young. She wasn't really old and withered and, you know, sort of had funny, dirty hair and things. She kind of was quite upright and elegant and dressed in white. And he was a bit surprised by this. And so he kind of almost immediately felt relaxed and that he could talk to this person. And she made him welcome and offered him a cup of tea or whatever they offered in the north of Sweden at that time. And sat down and said, "So, why are you here?" And he thought, "Oh, well, I was going to ask you that question." And he said, "Well, I've been trying to discover why I'm here. I don't mean here with you now, but here on this earth. And I can't find anyone who even seems interested in talking about it. They all seem to decide that it's too big a question to deal with, and better to ask other questions." And so she said, "Oh, that's an interesting question. Why are you here? That's a really big question, isn't it?" And she said, "Sometimes we ask questions that don't have any answers. Sometimes we ask a question that is so big, it's so it sounds so simple and so easy to say, like, what was before the beginning of the beginning? What was before the beginning?" That would do. And it's as though that would presuppose there was something before the beginning. And of course, if you got something before the beginning, you could have another beginning, couldn't you? So, and in the end, you kind of feel like you're just going to go down a spiral and end up in the mud, and you won't know where you are, and you won't know what's happening. She said that some questions aren't really questions. They aren't questions because there's no answer. You know, a question in English is kind of like something you can ask, and you have a supposition that there must be an answer to it. So you ask the question, and you expect the answer. But some of the questions we ask ourselves don't have answers. So you could then kind of say, they're not questions. They're just words that you strung together. And he found this amazing. He thought this was truly amazing, that you could think you're asking a question when there wasn't a question to ask. Or at least you didn't understand even the question that you were asking. It was too complicated for you. She said that some people, it seems, are asleep. She said the majority of people are asleep, and they sleep most of their lives. Occasionally, probably this happens to everyone, something happens in their life where they wake up. You heard in Vidyamala's story about that moment she woke up when she couldn't stand the pain any longer. It's that kind of third voice broke in and said, you don't have to get through to the morning, you just have to get through this moment. And it's as though we have these moments when we wake up. Sometimes it happens at moments of tremendous loss, some sort of tragedy in our life, something's really difficult, maybe at a funeral we go to and we start thinking about life and death, and then we think maybe it's best not to think about this, so we go back to sleep. And this seems to be what most of us do a lot of the times. We wake up, we ask a sort of what seems like a question, and then it's just we can't cope with it, so we go back to sleep. But some people, and Stubion was one of these people, he couldn't go back to sleep. He kept being awake. And this shaman woman said, well, there are people like you. There's quite a few people like you in the world. They wake up and they find it difficult to go back to sleep. They might go sleeping a while, but very quickly they wake up again and they're asking the same sort of questions. And she said that, this is going to be a little bit of a problem for you, Stubion. You're going through life asking serious, what we call existential questions, and not many people, or maybe no one's, got the answers for you. She said, maybe what you could do is become more awake. Maybe it's possible for you not to just be a little bit awake where you're asking a question, but for you to become even more awake. And you may discover that the question you're asking isn't a real question if you become really awake. Maybe something else will break through. Now, Vidyamala talked about this. She obviously has been to see a shaman too, and she's discovered this, that this light has broken through into her consciousness. And it obviously happens, because we've got living proof of this. And this is what this wise shaman woman was telling Stubion, this young man, by this time. And she said, actually, you can train your mind. You've got a mind. This is where your awareness is in your mind. You don't know what the mind is. That's just another question. And you don't need an answer for that, because there's no answer for what the mind is. We have a brain, and people can answer that question. But I was going to tell you a thought then that went on to jellyfish. But I'm going to reel myself back and leave the jellyfish back on the beach. Because the jellyfish reminded me of a brain. Anyway, that was association. So coming back to the shaman and the mind. Yeah, the mind is something we really don't know, if we have one even. We talk about our mind. Usually if you ask children where their minds are, they put their hands on their head. So they kind of associate the mind with the brain. But if you get them to clap their hands hard, and then their hands are stinging, you ask them where their mind is, and they think you can feel it. Your mind is between your hands. So we don't know what mind is. So he's trying to explain this sort of thing to him. And so, but you, wherever your mind is, you can train it. You can train your mind to be more and more aware, more and more awake, and of course, in mindfulness circles, is what we call mindfulness these days. It's just being awake, it's just being mindful of what's happening. You can become aware, she explained, of what you're thinking, that you actually are thinking. At this moment, you're all thinking, or you're asleep, one of the two. You're asleep, your eyes open, I can see, but I don't know if you're thinking. So you're thinking, you're having sensations going through your body, your sensations are triggering off thoughts. Your thoughts are probably associating with emotions. Could be just like you're tired and thinking, when's he going to shut up so I could get out and go home and have sleep. It may be, I hope he's going to go on and tell me the end of the story. But there will be all this going on. She said, you can train yourself to be more and more aware of this. And he said, well, how much can you, how far can you go? Could you find the answer to why? And she said, yes and no, and it depends. Because when you become so wide awake, you may discover the question isn't really a question, and therefore there's no answer. And so he kind of went away, he took that with him and really thought about it. She did say that one of the ways, so he wanted to know how to train the mind. And she said, well, training the mind's not easy. You first of all need someone to help teach you. And she's kind of offering, in a way, to help him to train his mind through concentration, through being aware of his body, being aware of his thoughts, being aware of his emotions, being aware of other people, being aware of the world. And then maybe being aware of the big questions that aren't really questions. So she kind of explained this rationally. She said, but really what you need is to associate with other people who are also doing this training, because you will help one another by being together. You will encourage one another not to fall asleep. It's a bit like when you're with people who are like kindred spirits or trying to develop their mind and you're falling asleep, they nudge you. And so you're awake, and you go, oh, I was just having a sleep. Well, did you know you were having a sleep? And you go, yeah, I was awake. And you become wide awake, and or you might become irritated. And then they just ask you, are you irritated? And you go, no. And they say, you're being honest. And you go, no. And that way you stay wide awake more and more. And it's only when you have got other people to nudge you when you're snoring. Vidya Mala's good at that. She says, snoring! And even when I'm asleep, I stop snoring, apparently. So you need people like that in your lives, right? To tell you when you're snoring, basically. That's a good thing to go away and remember, that you're all snoring most of the time. We all of us are fast asleep. And we're just getting on with our lives, and everything seems so important. But, you could have a different perspective and thinks all a dream, really, and I'm snoring in it. I don't know what's happening. So Stuart Bjorn went off and he found some friends, and then he gradually developed the ability to discover that his questions weren't really questions. So why am I telling you this story? It must be pretty obvious, really, that secular mindfulness is a way of waking up to the fact that you are in a situation. I mean, this is quite hard to tell people at Breathworks, but the message ultimately is you are in a situation with a condition you have which is tough, and you've got it, and that's it. Right? It's not like it may never change, you may never get better, but at this moment you're hurting, and you need to allow yourself to be kind to yourself and accept you hurt, whether that's emotionally or physically. Your body or your mind is hurting. That's the first thing one needs to learn to do. And you need to do that with compassion. You need to, let's take something like a bad back, which is, I don't actually have a lot of pain, but I did have, as soon as I started working with Vidya Mala, I got back pain. And it was for three months I had unspecified back pain. Well, it was specified, it was in a certain part of my back, but no one could find the reason except for the physio eventually helping to cure it. But for 3 months I had chronic pain, okay? That's the definition of it. And why did I go off on that little track? I have to go back to the story. Yeah, so I became aware that I had pain. And each moment of the day, I realised I had pain. And when people are living with pain that's not going to go away, it's really difficult to accept that. It's really painful helping people to accept that they hurt and that's life. That is their life. That is my life. It's hurting, and I don't want it. And it's the moment when people can have a... It can be devastating. But through that devastation can come the light, as it were. Something else breaks through, like it did with Vidyamana. She didn't know how she'd get through to the morning. Some people don't know how they're going to get through the rest of their lives with their pain and so on. What we teach at Breathworks is to be kind to yourself, to care for yourself. If your back hurts, don't forget, it's your back, it's not someone else's, it's not a monster in your back, it's not a little devil, it's your back, it's like a little child. You just need to scoop it up, hold it in your arms, and caress it, and be kind to it. If it's a mental, or psychological, or emotional difficulty you have, you're grieving over something, you need to have that kind attitude towards yourself, of being scooped up and held and accepting, I hurt. At this moment, I hurt. And that is what you would expect to do when you've got this sort of condition. If you just lost someone, it's painful. That is a part of the human nature. It's just painful. And so you allow yourself to hurt. Then you go on to realise that that's not the only thing that's happening at this moment. There's lots of nice things happening. There's seagulls making a noise out there. I quite like seagulls because you don't get them where I live. And it reminds me of the sea. And it's nice, it's pleasant sort of sound. A lot of you are now smiling. That's pleasant for me, because if you were all going, oh, and falling asleep off your chair, I'd feel a bit uncomfortable. So I'm enjoying myself standing here, and I'm enjoying myself so much I could go on for another half an hour, but I'm going to have to stop soon. So there's lots of little things in life that you can start accepting. And then you can accept learning how to hold all that together. And then with all that, you can make choices in your life. That's what you do with secular mindfulness. If you happen to be doing that a lot, you're becoming more and more aware. Unfortunately, you may end up a little bit like Styrbjörn. You might start asking questions like, well, what's beyond secular mindfulness, which is what we're here to find out this evening. What's beyond it? Or is there anything beyond it? Do we need to go beyond it? Well, if you're happy being half asleep and you just want to remain in that state, you don't need to go. I wouldn't go beyond it if I were you, because you might start waking up, and that might make you unhappy, because you start realising there's a lot more things in your life that are a bit painful than you realised before. But there are a lot more nice things in your life which you can benefit from. So it's a kind of a bittersweet experience sometimes. And a lot of people nowadays, they look for happiness. And a lot of people who become interested in Buddhism think they're going to be happy if they become Buddhists. And most of the Buddhists I know say that when they became Buddhist, life got more difficult. And it's not that you become unhappy being a Buddhist. It's just that when you wake up more, you realise what's going on around you more. And it's crazy. It stinks. It's a bit like you're in the, you know, you've tripped into this septic tank or something. It's full of you know what. And you start being aware of that. And you kind of think, it was easier when I was asleep. I didn't need to worry about these things. But the good side is that your confidence grows. You think, oh, I'm in the septic tank, but I can get myself out of the septic tank. And you realise, actually, week after week, you've been falling in the septic tank. And now you can avoid it, because you know septic tanks are not good things. Usually they have lids on. You must be pretty unmindful to go to unscrew the lid and jump into it. And sometimes they break, I suppose, and you end up in a field full of it. But the thing is, with secular mindfulness, it's not really encouraging people to wake up more. Whereas what the Buddha taught was that was the thing to do as being a human being. If there is a question to why, the answer would be something like, to live your life in a way that is in line with the way things really are. So when you, and you, then you ask the question, well, you ask another question, don't you? So how are things? What is the way things really are? Right? And, you know, you can read all the Buddhist texts, you can fill this room with Buddhist texts, and you may find the answer there, but it's not easy to find. So one way of doing this, because I'm running out of time, I have to give you a quick teaching here, is that if you want to know the way things are, is to discover whatever you do is going to cause you to do something that will make you feel more constricted, tight, or more expansive and open. Now, you need to be a bit aware of this, because if you're just asleep, you won't know whether you're constricted and tight, and you'll just be suffering, probably, and then you'll go to the doctor and want some pills, and then that can cause more suffering, or it might help you. So. But if you live your life and you do something, I'll tell you a little thing that happened this afternoon. I'd like to just rejoice in video. We went into a shop, you know, the last shop on the road to Ullapool, just outside Inverness on the road, says no more shops. So we went in that shop because it was the last shop before Inverness, and we thought that was a long way. And so we went into the shop, and there was two boys there, and they wanted to buy a pie, and they only had a card, but the card machine wasn't working. So Vidyaman said, "I'll pay for it." And I was thinking, and the woman said, "Well, you know, haven't you got any money at all?" And they said, "No." And anyway, she paid for it. It wasn't very much, but that's the sort of thing she does. And when she does it, and I was there, I could feel myself thinking, and she said, "Wouldn't you pay for it?" I said, "No." The woman said, "His mum would come and pay for it. The woman in the shop was going to give it for us. I said, let her do it." And I noticed that moment, I became a little bit tight. And I could see Vidyamala being, she wasn't saying, "Look at me." She was just feeling good. And I think this is what one has to offer the world, going beyond the secular. It's when you come to terms with what your condition is, you can actually make your life so much more sparkling, so much more interesting. It's not going to always be easy, because when you become more aware, you discover things that are difficult. But it will be so much more satisfying, because you'll be more and more awake. And as you become more and more awake, you become more and more awake. And you don't know how much this awakeness can go on. And it just goes on and on and on, until the world becomes a kind of glittering mass of lights. And people become totally interesting. Even the ones that look uninteresting become interesting. And everything you do is suddenly giving your life a whole new sense of meaning. And then you have the answer to why, don't you? You know why then. And you know that what you're doing is the right thing. So just look for the tight, dark, constricted you, or the bright, expansive, opening up you. And this is what Sturbjörn did. And he went on to become a great teacher, and he travelled around the world, and he's lost the name Vifor. He just became known as the Tame Bear. He was a big, powerful bear, in control of himself, fully awake, and going around the world helping people. That's my story, and I hope it meant something to you. Hope you enjoyed it. So, good night.
We both have questions, but